Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. As the state legislature begins its 2019 session, one lesson that is already apparent is that after a decade of tightening budgets at the Capitol, there'll be intense jockeying and lobbying among state agencies for the estimated $600 million in new funds for the coming state fiscal year. Yesterday, Governor Stitt laid out his priorities in the State of the State address: reform and better executive authority of state agencies, a $1,200 raise for state teachers, additional money for diversion and recovery programs, additional dollars for the Commerce Department's Quick Action Closing Fund to attract new businesses to the state, and restoring $250 million to the Rainy Day Fund. While the governor and state legislative leaders say they're on the same page, the governor and legislature often have different goals by the end of the session. Last week, I spoke with Oklahoma Policy Institute Executive Director David Blatt what he's hearing about state spending priorities from the legislature as well as the state agencies. David Blatt, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
There's a new legislature and a new legislative session that is getting underway. What do you think are the key issues that are likely to come out of Oklahoma City this coming session?
I think in broad terms, we're probably looking at four or five issues that are likely going to dominate the session. One is going to be the budget. Second, education, criminal justice, healthcare, and government reform. Those are the themes that we've heard from legislative leadership and Governor Stitt. We're having this conversation before the governor's address, but I think we're going to hear for sure he's going to be talking about expanding the governor's authority to appoint agency directors and to do more financial audits. We've heard, you know, ever since he ran for office during the campaign, his inaugural address, that he's very focused on expanding the governor's authority to appoint agency directors, a function currently filled by governing boards. So that's going to be a big focus of his, then education, budget, healthcare, and criminal justice.
From the very beginning of this state's history, we enshrined a weak governor. It is a relatively weak position compared to some other states, and heavy on the legislature and heavy independence from a lot of agencies in a lot of cases. Does this pass constitutional muster?
Likely there would be minimal constitutional challenges. I don't think there's anything in the Constitution that says that the governing board of, for example, the Department of Corrections must be appointed by a combination of the governor and legislative leaders. In recent years, we've seen, for example, the Commission of Human Services was changed, although that was in the Constitution and that was changed. So most agencies are statutory. So right now, take the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority, the state's Medicaid agency. The director of the healthcare authority is appointed by the board of the agency, and the board of that agency has the authority to replace the agency director. That board is appointed, 7-member board, with appointments from the governor, the speaker of the house, the president of the senate. So they serve rotating terms, generally one board member appointed every year. What Governor Stitt would like to do and what legislative leaders have indicated they're going to be strongly supportive of is to give the governor the authority to appoint and replace the director of the healthcare authority, the commissioner of mental health, the director of the Office of Juvenile Affairs, the director of the corrections department. The governor would make that appointment. There would be at most an advisory board, but that does not have governing authority.
So really that points out how weak the governor's position is. I mean, in a big situation like healthcare, mental health care, corrections, he has very little ability to affect policy from the executive side.
I think you can overstate that. Agency directors are always attentive to the political situation. And if a governor wants something done, most agency directors won't simply ignore it. But it is true that up until now, when a governor takes over, he or she, in the case of Governor Fallon, does not have that authority to appoint their own team in the way that the president does in appointing a cabinet. So the argument is that the governor's elected, is in charge of the executive branch, and the governor should have appointment authority. The other argument is that this gives the governor the opportunity to appoint his or her friends and confidants, that there can be cronyism, that maybe the best qualified people who an appointed board more familiar with the agencies may choose more qualified candidates. But the arguments could go either way.
Right. Another big effort of the governor was a look at outside audits of this sort of outsider sense that a lot of games have been played with the money that does come to Oklahoma City. And I have to tell you, in our Oklahoma Engage project, we did polling and we did focus groups. That sentiment was very common among a lot of Oklahomans, that they felt like there was a lack of transparency and that they really felt like the people that were in Oklahoma City sort of did their own bidding, not necessarily what citizens want and what was best for the state. What is your sense of what's going to happen on that front as far as stronger system of transparency and auditing?
I think you're going to hear both the governor and the legislature talk a lot about audits and financial accountability. The Senate President Pro Tem Greg Treat introduced a bill, Senate Bill 1, which would create a new Office of Financial Oversight and Audit that the legislature would control, probably looking for the governor to do more as well in terms of his cabinet appointments. We have to remember we already have a state auditor whose budget has been cut by 20 to 25% in recent years. We already have, for example, an incentive evaluation commission looking at various tax breaks. There is a lot of work. I think, you know, in the public's mind, one, there's always a general sense that money is being misspent. You know, that huge bloated Department of Waste, Fraud, and Abuse that everybody wants to cut and get rid of. I think in Oklahoma, the scandal over the state health department, what happened there, which nobody really ever truly figured out what was going on, has planted or nurtured the seeds of mistrust. And definitely there are ways to ensure that public dollars are spent more accountably and that the public has a better understanding of how dollars are spent. I think we can definitely go much further in making information known publicly. But I think also when you get into it, you'll find that most agencies do operate under proper procedures and that overall we have a pretty tight state government, particularly with the budget cuts we've seen in recent years.
Yeah. The other big issue that has come up is education and the economy. Education has obviously been the biggest issue because we saw a state teacher raise. We did see some improvement in education last year, but I know that the education department is asking for another close to $500 million in this coming year's budget, which would probably eat up what is expected to be all the increase in the actual taxable, the revenue that's coming into the state. So what do you see happening on the education front this year?
Sure. Well, I think we have to remember where we came from. We are now getting out of a long period of acute budget shortfalls year after year of funding cuts, where every agency saw their budget cuts, where we saw in education specifically, teachers had gone close to a decade without a pay raise, and where state aid funding had been slashed by about $180 million over a period where school enrollment had increased by over 50,000 students. Last year, due to a combination of a strong economy and some bold action by the legislature to raise taxes, we got a substantial teacher pay raise, but an average of 18% teacher pay raise. But there was very little, almost no money put into school operations, into the state aid funding. So the situation we have is that teachers did get a substantial raise, which was absolutely critical, but without additional money for the state aid fund formula, we're still seeing large class sizes. We're still seeing lack of school counselors and librarians and health professionals. We're still seeing outdated textbooks and resources. We're still seeing a quarter or a fifth of all school districts on a four-day school week. So I think that most in the education world are saying we need to continue to make progress on teacher salaries, support staff salaries, and support staff, bus drivers and paraprofessionals and cafeteria workers are severely, severely underpaid. They can make $15,000, $18,000 a year. So we need to do more on salaries, but we also need to put more money into the state aid funding to reduce class sizes, to restore those lost programs in fine arts and AP and STEM classes, and hopefully get class sizes down substantially.
I think the one positive sign that came out of education state superintendent's comments recently was that she was saying for the first time in a lot of years, she was talking about the House Bill 1017 mandated class sizes.
Right.
I haven't think I've heard that in a decade.
Right. And that goes back to the early 1990s when the legislature passed this landmark school reform legislation, House Bill 1017, which put in place some statutory class size limits, but those were subject to adequate funding. And in past years, as funding has shriveled up, the class size requirements of 1017 have all been waived year after year after year. We may be at the point now where funding is sufficient that we'd go back to 1017, but without additional money, we're not going to be able to hire those new teachers to get class sizes down. I do think we're going to see a real debate, though, because the Senate Republicans released their very succinct legislative agenda for 2019. One of the provisions related to education, and I think it was significant that they said that Senate Republicans vow to honor and protect the state's current investment in education, which is very different than saying they were going to increase funding for education. The language was honor and protect the current $2.9 billion investment in education. I think that sent a signal that for those who are looking for more funding for education, whether it's for teacher salaries or general school operations or for school counselors, as Superintendent Hoffmeister has talked about at length, it's going to be a battle. There is no additional funding that is being promised really to anybody.
Higher education is another area where we've seen pretty serious cuts.
Huge cuts.
And while some money has come into the system, I think at least some in higher education were promised raises, and those raises did not materialize this year.
So if you look at higher education, they have suffered the biggest cuts of any of the major state agencies. Higher ed funding is down over 25% compared to a decade ago, and Oklahoma's cut higher education funding more than any other state in the nation in recent years. So the regents have put forward a budget request that included $100 million in additional funding for a variety of needs. One of the issues is that now that teachers did get that average $6,000 raise last year, it's making it really difficult for community colleges and regional universities in particular to hire faculty, whether it's adjuncts or junior faculty, because many of them, of the colleges, have been paying less than what somebody can get teaching at the local elementary school or high
school. Especially if you have an advanced degree.
Right. Yeah. So in order to kind of equalize that pay system, higher ed is looking for additional money. But they've also seen operating budgets cut over the years, and that's led to loss of programs and classes. So higher ed is also
tuition
going up
as well.
You know, higher ed has sort of been the whipping boy in recent years, particularly a couple years ago in the wake of the penny sales tax proposal. Higher education took something like a 15% cut in 1 year. Nobody expects that funding to be fully restored all at once, but higher ed is certainly in the queue for additional funding.
We know there will be additional revenue coming into the state this year. I believe you've said that it might not be as much as we're projecting at this point because of oil prices and some other things, but what's the legislative leaders want to do with that extra money? Have they made any statements or signs of what they would like to do?
Well, what we know is there's a statutory board, the Board of Equalization, that meets twice. They meet in December and then again in February to review and certify revenue estimates. The initial estimate that came out in December was that there was going to be about $610 million more next year than there was this year. A lot of people assume that when the revised estimate comes out in mid-late February, that that number is going to go down, particularly with the decline in oil prices that we've seen in recent months. There's a widespread assumption that that number is going to be lower, but it may not be that much lower. What we've seen from legislative leaders, I think we'll see from the governor, is an effort to try to dampen expectations. Roger Thompson, who's the Senate Appropriations Chair, is saying that when all is said and done, when we look at our obligations, we may be dealing with closer to $150 to $250 million. I think he may be really trying to lowball things to get people to understand that there's not going to be $1 billion in new money out there to fund everything. But there will be new money, be additional money, which we haven't really had in a long time. And there will be serious competition for it. If you look to where we are now compared to a decade ago, this year's budget is about $800 million below where we were a decade ago, adjusted for inflation. So across state government, whether it's Common Ed or higher ed or mental health or the Arts Council or environmental protection, every agency has gone through an extended period where they have eliminated staff, done away with programs, tightened their belt, put off expenditures and investments. Now that the weather is better, that the sun is coming out, it's going to be a real challenge for legislators to come back and say, well, sorry, we still don't have enough money.
My guest today is David Blatt, the executive director of the Oklahoma Policy Institute. He joins us to offer a preview of the new legislative session. We mentioned Senator Thompson. One thing he's talked about, which has been very interesting to hear him speak, is interest in perhaps expanding Medicaid and receiving that federal 90% match. And he was saying, you know, it would cost about $100 million to begin expanding Medicaid. We'll get $900 million coming back into the state. That can't be a bad thing. So how many other members of the legislature are willing to think about that this year?
We've definitely squandered years of opportunities to support our healthcare system, and it's had real consequences. Oklahoma has the second highest uninsured rate in the nation. We have seen hospitals that have closed and community health centers that have really struggled.
And you know, if you live in a rural area, you're driving a lot further in many cases for healthcare.
Absolutely, where facilities have closed or have stopped, departments have shuttered. So certainly much of the opposition to the Affordable Care Act was over the law's author, President Obama. With the president out of office, with challenges in Congress to the Affordable Care Act having been defeated, it's clear to most everybody that the ACA is the law of the land and will almost certainly remain so. So we've seen some shift among Republican leaders who have gone from saying this isn't going to happen to saying it's worth a conversation. And part of that is because they know that just last November, voters in three very conservative states, Utah, Idaho, and Nebraska, voted to expand Medicaid through ballot initiative. And there have been discussions that have begun here in Oklahoma to say if the legislature can't get this done in the next year or two, let's get this on the ballot, let the voters decide. And there's a real presumption that if given the chance that voters would absolutely vote to expand Medicaid. So the legislature maybe has additional pressure now to do that and maybe craft a proposal more to their liking than what would be put in a ballot initiative. So what we've heard from Senator Thompson and others is that they're open to this. There has been legislation filed, one bill by Senator McCourtney, some other shell bills which still need some detail that would provide an expansion of Medicaid, perhaps working through our existing Insure Oklahoma, a private-public partnership. Don't know whether that'll happen this session, but it's certainly being talked about. I think there's a growing recognition that this has to happen.
One of the big areas where the agency is asking for huge increases is in criminal justice and corrections. And I think when you talk to legislators, this is one of the areas where they feel like this will be an area that will get intense focus during the session. And I think there's a big effort to try to pass some things this year in criminal justice. The retroactive nature of State Question 780 and some other things, what do you think is more likely to pass on that?
I think criminal justice reform is one of the areas that has been a bright spot in the last couple of years and will continue to be. We've seen dozens of bills filed that address a whole bunch of the longstanding problems with our criminal justice system, whether it has to do with sentencing, whether it has to do with what happens to people who are released out of the system. And then one of the most promising areas and desperately needed areas reform is around fees and fines and bail. I think there's going to be serious efforts to change our bail system where people tend to be held in jail based on their ability to pay rather than the severity of the offense that they've committed, and real efforts this year to move away from the cash bail system and set up a more a sensible system where it's based on an individual's threat level. And we're also hearing that there could be real effort to reduce the burden of fees and fines. We have just loaded up so many fees and fines to fund everything in the criminal justice system, from the courts to the DA's office. They've become entirely dependent on squeezing every last dollar and then some from every criminal defendant, most of whom are indigent and don't have the money. And you create this perverse system where you are making the prosecutors, the public defenders, the courts all dependent on fees and fines, which means that when people get out of prison, they have so much debt that they're really almost unable to get back on their feet over months and years. So there is a real effort underway to address this. It's going to take more funding through general revenue, through tax revenue of the courts if we're ever going to do this, but move that onus away from those indigent individuals.
And of course, not only for the individuals, but for the system as a whole, it creates an opportunity for corruption.
Absolutely. We saw there was that scathing report that the Federal Justice Department did after Ferguson, where they looked at the law enforcement in Ferguson and showed how dependent they were on fees and fines and the
asset forfeiture. Yeah.
That's another one. Yeah. So we think that this is probably not a problem that can be solved in 1 year, but that we can really make some real progress in shifting the funding for our legal system away from fees and fines towards a more sustainable tax model.
Now, if you were able to make the fee and fine system a little less onerous for defendants, and you had a way of funding the courts and the DA's offices through traditional governmental funding, would that make a dent in our correction population?
It could. It would certainly make a dent in the number of people who are in jail, many of whom are, you know, in our county jails because they've been arrested on a warrant because they didn't pay their court costs or their fees previously.
The debtor's prison. Debtor to the state, really.
Right, which we're not supposed to have, but we do have. And there's supposed to be a system where the courts look at the ability to pay in assessing fines, but really that hasn't worked. And I feel like this is an area where some serious progress can and will be made this session. So I think that's one of the encouraging areas. There have been mentioned dozens of bill filed, but what's been really interesting is as recently as 2 years ago, it was hard to find a legislator who was willing to carry a criminal justice reform bill. We were seeing grassroots effort from Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform, Chris Deal in Oklahoma City and George Kaiser Family Foundation, Women in Recovery. There was a lot of grassroots enthusiasm, but the legislators were looking at this and saying, don't want to touch it. They're worried about their DAs and the backlash from law enforcement. And now there are at least 20 different legislators who filed bills. And I know talking to legislators from both parties, when I've asked them, what do you see as your top priority this session? Almost all have said criminal justice is going to be their number one or their number two issue. So there's been a real change. We saw it at the federal level with the recent bipartisan federal legislation. We're seeing it very much at the state level. Whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, liberal, conservative, everyone understands that the criminal justice system is broken and we need to fix it.
You know, when the Equalization Board met in December and it mentioned all this extra revenue, I think one of the most disheartening things I saw was immediately there was a state legislator who proposed a bill that would basically offset some of the fee increases we saw this last session. How much of an effort do you think there'll be, given the fact that there is more revenue, to undo some of the progress that was made last session, at least in shoring up the budget?
I'm actually fairly optimistic about this, Rich. I think that legislators had to work so hard to finally get a tax increase through. They fought for 2 or 3 years with the supermajority requirement. There was finally a realization that we had cut taxes too much, we'd cut funding too much, that teachers and state employees had gone too long without raises. And they worked so hard last year to finally get that House Bill 1010XX through the legislature with the supermajority. I think that those legislators who were there last year, and also those legislators, the new ones, the big freshman class who ran for office, they're going to be pretty cautious before they start cutting the revenue base. I think I would hardly say that we're never going to see tax cut fever sweep Oklahoma again, but I don't think that we're going to see a big outbreak of it. I think that they recognize that last year was just the first step along the road to restoring budgets to the place where they need to be, and that we have a lot more work to do.
Last year was sort of an anomaly for the legislature, in which usually the first 2 months of the session is filled with a flood of frivolous, sometimes patently unconstitutional bills that get consideration, get headlines. Generally, they go nowhere. Occasionally, a hot button issue will go to the governor's desk. But for the most part, it's about making headlines. You know, with the voter engagement we saw on both sides in 2018, it was sort of disheartening also to see once again this flood of bills that came out right as the first month of filing bills came out with the usual suspects. Is there any appetite by the legislature to sort of take up that game again, or is it really going to be hard work again?
I think that we've seen from most of the legislators, particularly those elected in the last two election cycles, that they're really committed to rolling up their sleeves and taking care of business and solving problems and not wasting time on some of these hot button social issues. But those are always going to be out there. I think we're going to see another battle this year over what's been called constitutional carry in terms of expanding gun rights. There was a bill that passed last year that Governor Fallon vetoed. We're going to see another effort for sure on that. We will continue to see bills to prohibit abortion in dozens of more ways than beyond those that have already been passed here. I heard from a friend who works for an LGBTQ organization that there actually weren't any anti-gay and lesbian bills actually even filed this session. So that may suggest that they sort of moved away from that sort of easy demagoguing. So, you know, we'll continue to see some, but I think in general, the areas that we've talked about, government reform, the budget, healthcare, education, criminal justice, that's what I think legislators have heard from their constituents is what they're supposed to be focused on. And I do think that that's where we're going to see most of the work.
Do you think there'll be a breakthrough bill this year that sort of takes people by surprise as far as making some concrete progress on some serious problems?
I think criminal justice is going to be the most promising one where we're really going to see some progress. I think where we're going to see the biggest fights are going to be over education. How much, if any, additional money goes to the state aid funding to try to hire more teachers? How much might go for teacher and support staff pay raises? And then some other issues around how schools are operated. I think that's going to be the big point of contention.
David Blatt, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
David Blatt is the executive director of the Oklahoma Policy Institute, offering a preview of the new legislative session, which gets underway today after yesterday's State of the State address. I spoke with David last week prior to the governor's address to the legislature. If you'd like to learn more about OK Policy's funding priorities for the new legislative session, visit okpolicy.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.